OTB AM. With Gillette, your Mo supported our frontline workers this Movember.
Danny, good morning to you. How are you?
Hiya. Good, thanks. You all right?
It says here, host of the new podcast, United Rewind. Your first episode goes live today.
Yeah. That's all right. We're looking back at classic United matches, and we started off with Norwich away in the 92-93 season, and the first episode went live this morning. So, hopefully it's acceptable in some way.
Is Norwich away 92-93? Is that Steve Bruce Fergie time classic?
It's the game before that, actually. Right. When United were, it was a game that they probably needed to win, and Mark Hughes was suspended. So everyone thought that Alex Ferguson was going to play Brian Robson to snarl and kick people, and he actually brought in Andrei Kanchelskis. So he played with three wingers and Eric Cantona, and United scored three goals in a kind of 10-minute period in the first half and absolutely devastated Norwich. And it was probably the first time that we'd properly seen that counter-attacking football in such a way where it was just used to take a team apart. And when we look back on Alex Ferguson, to me, that's one of his prime contributions to the game, is making it obviously he didn't invent counterattacks, but a situation where a team is really dangerous when they're defending a corner or when they're generally defending, and the ability to get to the other end in 7 or 8 seconds and to do it repeatedly.
Okay, and you can kind of see that pattern repeat then over the next two decades, as it turned out, from Ferguson's perspective. Can we talk about some of the issues du jour? And I was very interested to see what you thought of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's handling of the Cavani situation. Obviously, this is a sensitive issue for Manchester United, given how the parallels really with what went on between Luis Suarez and Patrice Evra, down to Cavani being a countryman. So how well has Ole Gunnar Solskjaer dealt with the fallout here, do you think?
I think it seemed okay. I mean, it's one of those situations where ultimately, and I got a load of aggravation for saying this on Twitter, but I still think it, that as someone who is not harmed in any way other than vicariously by the use of the term, it's not really, I don't really feel that it's for me to start saying, well, this is this and that is that. I understand the context of the term, that he didn't mean it to be used in any kind of way to take offence. But at the same time, it's not for me or Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to say whether it's okay or not. So yeah, I actually thought that Ole did all right, where, because he said that we'll go with whatever is decided. So beyond that, I know that I think we can say for sure that he didn't mean to cause any offence, and we would hope that the fact that the potential for him to have possibly caused offence is something that he takes seriously. His statement seemed to say that, and what he did that a lot of other people haven't done is he just said sorry. He said sorry, he learned something from it, and wanted to just not, there was no self-justification really. He explained the context and said sorry, and that was it. And if there is some kind of punishment, then I hope that whatever punishment there is accepted as part of a wider battle against racism. If it's decided this is strict liability and you did this and that is the punishment for that, and that is always going to be the punishment for that, and everyone needs to know that that is always going to be the punishment for that, then that is fine. But as a white Jewish male, for me to say what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said was acceptable and put everything to bed, I don't really feel like it's my place. I can have an opinion on it. Anyone can have an opinion about anything, but the value of that opinion on that subject is not significant.
Sure, no, I totally understand that they're two separate things. It's like how football deals with this issue needs to be consistent, and how the rest of the world needs to listen to voices that are most affected by it. I can see that they can exist in parallel. I guess the point you made about the punishment for this is going to be X, Y, or Z, and if that's consistent, then that would be fine. And I think maybe that's where Manchester United probably have to just agree with that and then double down and say, actually, we support that because of what happened with Patrice Evra and Luis Suarez. That's the difference, where Liverpool actually came out and went through the gymnastics to try and justify what happened with Suarez, and then obviously felt like he was being victimised. Whereas if Man United say, yeah, OK, we've had a word with Cavani, we've explained that things are slightly different here, this is the punishment, we're accepting the punishment, that would essentially be the end of that story.
Yeah, I mean, you got the impression with Suarez and Evra that if Suarez had just said sorry at the beginning, it would never have got to where it got to, but he didn't. And I think it is different, the Suarez and Evra situation. The word used was different, and Suarez used it in an argument as an insult. And actually, I can't remember now how many games he got, but whatever he got, he was lucky that it wasn't more. Because what Suarez did was very, as far as I understand it, very obviously and deliberately racist. You called someone a name that you used as an insult whilst you were arguing with them. Like, there's no justification or anything that you or any exculpation there at all. It's just that's what it is. It's that. Whereas Cavani is different, but if we're saying that there's going to be strict liability on any use of any of these terms, however you do it, then that's fine, and that's what will be. But I don't think Suarez is only a suitable comparison, really, in that like he's Uruguayan and so is Cavani, because otherwise the term that they use just isn't the same, and the context that in which they used it is also completely different. But yeah, if we're comparing reactions, then United's reaction to and Cavani's reaction to just delete it immediately, to delete his Instagram immediately, to say sorry, and for Ole to say that whatever happens subsequently will happen is obviously the way that you would want people to react, and you hope that it's genuine and not just people have learned from it and not just what do we have to do to make this go away. But even if it is what do we have to do to make this go away, I guess it's a better way of trying to make it go away. But hopefully Cavani, his teammates and everyone else in football has learned something.
Yeah, no, because that's all we can ever ask for as an outcome from these situations. Obviously, we could ask that it doesn't happen again. That'd be the best thing. Let's move on.
Yeah, I guess that's part of learning something ultimately. Yeah. It won't be done again.
Donny van de Beek, where are we at the moment in the Manchester United fans loving him and understanding exactly what his role is, and where is the swingometer at the moment?
I think it was always somewhere good. He arrived as someone who had proven himself in the Champions League and had looked really. I hadn't seen loads of him before he came, but I'd like what I've seen. And I think that everyone has liked what they've seen more. He's a really intelligent player. One of the things you notice about him is he's always looking over his shoulder. He's always assessing where people are on the pitch, where his teammates are, where opponents are. I guess he's received a brilliant football education, which means that he can play in a lot of different positions. And just having him on the pitch is really useful for United, particularly because I think that it's a point where if he's not playing, if you stop Bruno Fernandes, then you go quite a long way to stopping United, because there are other, the strikers can all create goals for themselves and can all score out of nothing, but they're not going to, the other midfield players, they're going to outrun the other team, but they're not going to outpass another team. They're not going to create that much. But if suddenly you've got two creators in midfield, and when you have those two creators, they're both really intelligent, really good players who understand each other, that becomes much harder to stop. And when Van de Beek plays with Fernandes, I think United look a much more dangerous, a much better team. Because Fernandes isn't really a player who helps you control the game that much. He's someone who helps you win a game because he provides decisive moments with passes and goals and that kind of thing. Van de Beek gives you that, but I think that he also participates in the game more. He's also taking the ball, knocking it off, and just keeping the play moving. And the combination of those two players is great. The question is how and when Ole will be prepared to play them both together and in what context. And tonight is a good example of whether he will or whether he won't, because in most league games, United should be playing both of those two together unless they're resting one of them, because they should be better than most teams in the league. Whereas you've got a game like tonight, and my guess tonight is that Ole would prefer to play three at the back, unless Luke Shaw happens to be fit. Don't really think he can do that because Axel Tuanzebe is suspended. So he doesn't have three centre-backs that he trusts. So my guess is it'll be four at the back. And then the question for Ole is, if Scott McTominay is fit, does he play a midfield three and put McTominay and Fred in there, because United basically need to not get beaten? And what they're really trying to do against a team like PSG is they're trying to shuttle them out wide, because Mbappe plays on one side, Neymar plays on the other. Neither of them are wingers and both of them want to attack the box. So what you're looking to do is you're trying to stop up the middle of the pitch and force them to go around the sides. And one of the ways that you would do that is you play McTominay, Fred, and probably Bruno Fernandes, and that's your three. But they might play a diamond to get one more midfield player in there, and then they could play Matic in there, or they could play Van de Beek in there. And it really depends, because on the one hand, if United play Fernandes, Van de Beek, and just one of the others or two of the others, you would think that that would be a midfield that is good enough to dominate PSG in that area, because ultimately PSG's midfield isn't good. Verratti is obviously a high-level player, but Herrera, Paredes, they're decent players, but they're runners. They're runners more than they're passers, that you would not expect them to dominate. But on the other hand, if United are busy dominating in midfield, that makes them vulnerable to a counter from Neymar and Mbappe, who are two of the best players in the world at punishing mistakes, punishing space. And United do only need a point. But when you start playing for a point, and if you send the message to the players that a point will suffice, then the attitude changes. So it is a difficult one tonight. I guess what I would do, now that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer asks, is I would probably play four in midfield. I'd play a diamond and two strikers, because that would enable the midfield control. And
OTB AM with Gillette, your most supported our frontline workers this Movember.
Have you seen a higher individual level from Manchester United players when you come up against teams such as Paris Saint-Germain the first game, such as RB Leipzig in the first game as well, that it's more than the tactical approach, more than the other team expecting to get something against Manchester United, that this set of players really does rise to these sort of big European occasions?
It's a bit of that. It's also, I mean, there's a few, first of all, they're really good players, a lot of them, and their top level is a really good level, so that if they're playing in a big game, it seems that they're able to raise their level to that top level, because it's not that they can turn it on and off, but it would obviously get anyone going, playing in the Champions League versus playing Burnley at home or whatever. You can understand why some players might get more up for one than for the other, because the kind of players that United have is that they probably lack one or two more of those players who are there every game, who inspire those around them. And that's one of the things that Bruno Fernandes has brought. He's there every game. It doesn't matter who it's against. He's intense every game. Whereas United have some players who don't quite have that personality where they are intense every game. So there's a bit of that. There's also the fact that United are really good on the counter, and so they're offered more space in which to counter in those games. Also, it seems like Ole, the coaches, whoever's responsible for the coaches, for the coaching, the tactics, are better at arranging it for these kind of games. But I also think that there's a level of understanding. The understanding that you need to go forward to create chances in a game against a slightly better team in some ways can be less than when you're playing against a blanket defence. And they've got better at the blanket, at scoring against teams who defend deep. But the cohesion that you require to pull them apart takes time. And the reason why the teams that were best at it were so good at it, like Liverpool and Man City, is partly because the managers and the coaches are great, but it's also because they've been playing together for longer. And the more you play together for longer, you develop patterns of play that are intuitive, where you know where your teammates are going to be. And United are getting better at that, but they're not quite there yet. So I think that with most things, there are a few reasons, and football is also quite a random game, and it's not a very large sample size, so we also need to bear that in mind as well.
On Edinson Cavani, the footballer then, did you see enough at the weekend to suggest that he could become Manchester United's first choice number nine pretty instantly?
Maybe. I think that the way that as I said, tonight I would play a diamond, so I think that that's what Ole will do. My guess would be the two strikers will be him and Martial tonight, because both of them can hold the ball up and that will take the pressure off. And that then means that you have Marcus Rashford and Mason Greenwood to throw on when PSG are tired. So I think the thing about Cavani that's different to all the other strikers is he's a striker. And that sounds like a ridiculous thing to say, but Marcus Rashford likes to drop off. He wants the ball to feet. He doesn't always run in behind, and he doesn't always gamble, which is one of the reasons he's good off the left, because he's coming from in to out and you're sort of shuttling him inside. Anthony Martial has sort of been, he's a good finisher, but he's got great turned and running at a defence, but he's had to learn to make the runs that Cavani is already making, and he's still not making enough of them. He doesn't get enough free goals, and it's the same with Marcus Rashford. You don't see those guys score enough tap-ins. Mason Greenwood is an amazing finisher, one of the best finishers I've ever seen in my life. And it sounds like a ludicrous thing to say about someone who's played so rarely, or relatively rarely, or relatively seldom, but he's an unbelievable finisher. But he's an unbelievable finisher with the ball at his feet. As in, if you give him the ball anywhere around the box, there's a good he will almost definitely hit the target, and there's a really good chance that he'll score. But again, he's not yet a poacher. Whereas Cavani, you see that he just has an ability to understand where the ball's going to drop from prediction, trial and error, having done it lots of times. If you saw the first goal that he scored at the weekend, he knows that Bruno Fernandes is going to shoot. He knows that there's a good chance his shot doesn't go on target, and therefore there's a good chance he can get to it. And he runs, they showed it on Match of the Day too, I think. He runs past four or five players, but he's on the move when he makes that header, when everyone else is standing still. And that is something that no one else in the squad really does. And he also gives you a hold-up option as well. And his movement's always been great. It's not something he's really learned because of experience. I mean, I'm sure he's got better at it, but he's always been good at that. That's always been one of his things. So it doesn't necessarily mean that he is the striker that United would want for every game, but it does mean three goals. And when Alex Telles is playing, it means headers and one-touch finishes at the near post, because I think United haven't crossed the ball much recently in the last couple of years. And I think one of the reasons is they don't have strikers who attack the near post, and the other reason is they don't have wingers and players who can deliver a ball. They now have both of those things, and that gives them a different option of scoring goals. So I think that Cavani won't play every game, probably isn't right for every game, but I would say that if United are playing two strikers tonight, I'll be sure that he'll be one of them, because he scored two goals at the weekend. He's on a buzz. Why would you not leech off that?
Everybody always scores against their former clubs as well. Good stuff, Daniel. Thanks a million for joining us this morning. Cheers.
See you in a sec. Cheers, guys. Bye.
Daniel Harris there, and you can get his new podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show, is live from 7:30 every morning. Listen on the OTB Sports app, or ask Alexa, Siri, or Google to play OTB Sports Radio to start your day with the latest sports news and reaction. Subscribe by searching OTB AM on your podcast app.